Let's take our Bibles, please, and turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5. We're working our way through, through 1 Timothy. The section we're going to deal with today is verses 3 through 16. And this is the instructions that Paul gave to Timothy to be taught to the churches and to the elders with regard to care for widows in the church. Now, the Bible uses widows and orphans typically as to refer to the most underprivileged people. And particularly in their day. Now today, you know, widows are not normally as underprivileged as they were in Bible times. In Bible times, when a woman lost her husband, she lost her means of support. And in many cases, a woman like that, particularly if she was older, she basically became destitute. She was basically had to rely on, handouts and things of that nature. Today we have, you know, Social Security and retirement programs and IRAs and things like that, and hopefully help that situation. But back in Bible times, that didn't exist. But the Lord has, according to the Bible, the Lord has compassion on the underprivileged. We see this throughout the law of Moses. We see it throughout the Psalms and many places in the Bible. I want to look at a couple of passages of Scripture concerning widows. Let's take our Bibles and turn to Psalm chapter 68. What we want to understand today from the main passage that we're going to be dealing with in Timothy is what is our responsibility as a church to widows, whether in our society, whether people that are part of our extended families, or people who are part of our congregation. Psalm chapter 68, I want to read verses 4 through 5. Let me get there. Sing to God, sing praise to his name, extol him who rides on the clouds. By his name, Yah, that's the shortened version of Yahweh. And rejoice before him, a father of the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy habitation. Look at that. A father for the fatherless and a defender of widows. I want you to turn to Malachi chapter 3. The Bible has a lot to say about those who would exploit the underprivileged class of people. He considered it a serious crime. Malachi chapter 3, verse 5. I will come near you for judgment. I will be a swift witness against sorcerers, against adulterers, against perjurers. Now, notice these crimes that God is listing. These are the ones that make God the most angry. Against those who exploit wage earners and widows and orphans, and against those who turn away an alien, because they do not fear me, says the Lord of hosts. You know, the law of Moses was given to govern the nation of Israel as God's covenant people. And God himself was the king. And the laws that he gave through the Ten Commandments and the rest of the laws that are contained in the books of Moses were meant to provide a system of justice to govern this nation. It had laws to do with pretty much every aspect of life for the Jews who were under that law. But I want you to notice what provisions the law had for those underprivileged people such as widows and orphans. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 24. Excuse me. Verse 19. When you reap your harvest in your field, and you forget the sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. That was a bundle of wheat. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again, or a second time. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterwards. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. So the idea was that those who were better off, landowners and so forth, in Israel, were to intentionally leave some of the crops behind in the field so that those people who were underprivileged and who couldn't provide for themselves could go in and pick up the leftovers. Now, why do you think God did that? I mean, obviously, he cared about them. But why didn't he say, when you encounter a beggar on the side of the road with a sign that says, homeless will work for food, that you're supposed to give him a 20? Notice, go ahead, Margaret.
That those who were receiving made the effort to get out.
Okay, exactly. That's exactly right. He didn't set up a system where people who were underprivileged would beg. Isn't that right? He set up a system where those who had plenty of means could leave a little bit behind, but those people still had to go out in the field and gather their own food. Now, what's the difference?
Well,
the
scripture says if you don't want, you don't
eat. Okay. All right. It gave them some responsibility to take care of themselves, right? But there's something else. Yes?
Pride in your feeding yourself.
Dignity, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, if people who are reduced to begging for their food, all their dignity has been taken away. Isn't that right? And in our society, you know, we don't have crops that people leave in their fields for those people who are underprivileged. You know, our society doesn't work that way. And some people who are homeless, now, look, a lot of people who are out there begging, they figure they can make more money doing that than holding a job. So I'm not saying, you know, that they're all, and a lot of them are in that situation because of their own faults. You know, I mean, let's face it. But there are some legitimate ones out there. But when people are reduced to that, homelessness and begging, they have no dignity left. Their dignity is taken away. And what God did, the system that he set up, even for the most underprivileged people, like widows and orphans and so forth, it allowed them to have some dignity. Even though they were getting a handout in a sense, but they did have to go pick it and so forth. Can anybody think of an example in the Bible where this system was put in place? Who said Ruth? Good job, Thelma. Good job. I want you to turn to Ruth chapter 2. Excuse me. Oops. Now, most of you know the story of Ruth. Ruth was Naomi was a Jewish woman who had moved, because of famine, had moved into the land of Moab. Her husband died. She had three sons, and her three sons married three Moabite women, foreigners. And their husbands died, and so now we have Ruth, the mother-in-law of these three women, and who are all widows. All of them are widows. Naomi goes back to Israel, and Ruth, who's a Moabite girl, goes with her. Let's look at chapter 2, verses 1 through 9. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Oh, my daughter, go, my daughter." And she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' So she came, and he continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house." You can see her. She's following around after the reapers and picking up what falls off the cart and so forth. Is she working?
Yes.
Is she doing something to help her situation?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I think this was a beautiful law that God put in his law so that these women who had no other means of support could still support themselves in a sense that gave them a little bit of dignity and so forth. Now, the question then comes, should we as Christians, what should our attitude be towards widows? I want you to turn to James chapter 1. Excuse me. Verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but he deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. And the word "visit" there doesn't mean just, you know, show up at their door and hang out for a half an hour. It means to really minister to them and to their needs. Pure religion. So this shows you where God's heart is. Isn't that right? His heart is for the underprivileged. His heart is for those who are hurting. His heart is for those who are suffering, for those who don't have anything or don't have much. But the question then is, well, we as Christians, it says, you know, the widows and the orphans, should we be feeding all the orphans and supporting all the widows out there? I mean, there's lots of them out there.
If their families can't eat, it tends to do that.
Okay, well, what if they're, let's take a survey of our neighborhood, this zip code area. We find all the widows. Should we as a church be going from door to door and supporting all those widows? It's a good question, because this passage doesn't really qualify what widows he's talking about specifically. Walter?
Well, I was going to say that you would start in the church. You start in your own group here
first. First? But after we do that, then what?
I think as the Lord lays on your heart to move out to help other people if you're able to. I mean, you can get to a point where you can help everybody in the world, and all of a sudden you leave your own family to pride.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Go to Isaiah chapter 9. Let's see what God says about this. Excuse me. Verse 13. "For the people do not turn to him who strikes them." This is God. "Nor do they seek the Lord of hosts. Therefore the Lord will cut off the head and the tail from Israel, palm branch and the bulrush in one day. The elder and honorable, he is the head. The prophet who teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and those who are led by them are destroyed. Therefore the Lord will have no joy in the young man, nor have mercy on their fatherless and widows. For everyone is a hypocrite and an evildoer, and every mouth speaks folly. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For wickedness burns as a fire, it shall devour the briars and thorns, and so forth. What's God saying here? That he's going to have no mercy on the widows in this particular instance. Why? I don't hear anything.
Because they're not faithful to him.
They're not faithful to him. They're hypocrites. Now, you know, he's talking about specific ones. He's not talking about all widows. But he's talking about some, right, who are unfaithful to God. He has no mercy on them. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus told, in fact, I'll tell you what, let's read that. I think this is an important point. Go to Matthew chapter 5, verse 42. Jesus talks here about how generous we are to be as his followers. He says, verse 39, I tell you, do not resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your coat. And whoever compels you to go a mile, go with him too. Give, now notice this, give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Oh. Now, is that a command that is universal? Everybody who comes to the door of this church and wants a handout, should we give them what they ask for? And even more? Well, what's that? If we take that verse as meaning, you know, this is a universal thing you do for everybody, then it would seem that way. And what would happen to our church? We would deplete all our budget in no time. Word would get around, hey, they're giving out free money at Oasis Christian Church, right? And we'd have a line out there all the way down to Hillsborough Avenue, right? We would go under in no time. Well, if you continue reading this very same sermon in chapter 7, he's still speaking in the same sermon, and he says in chapter 7, verse 6, he says, do not give what is holy to dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces. Wait a minute. He said, if somebody asks, don't turn them away, and now he's saying, don't give what's holy to dogs and pigs. You see, there's a balance here in what Jesus commands. There's a reason why he says to turn the other cheek and to give to those who ask of you and those he's talking about those who persecute you and so forth. And then at the same time, he says, you need to distinguish between different kinds of people. See, just like it said back there in Isaiah, that God has no mercy on some of the fatherless and some of the widows and so forth under certain circumstances, but in other circumstances he has great compassion for them. We read in Malachi that, you know, God is angry with those who would exploit those who are underprivileged widows and so forth. See, so what do we get from all this? We seem to be looking at some opposite things or things that seem to be in conflict, but how do we find balance in all that? Anybody? Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, you can draw a distinction between the rules that God sets up for how the people are to govern themselves within his own community. And he's putting these restrictions on, you know, who to bless and who to support and not, to draw a distinction between those that are faithful and those aren't.
Okay, God draws a distinction between those who are hypocrites and those who are not. Right? And those who truly are in need, but they are looking to God for their sustenance. He draws a distinction in these passages. Well, let's look at the passage that we have actually to go over today in 1 Timothy chapter 5, because the Apostle Paul actually gives some guidelines here in drawing these kinds of distinctions. Let's read it. We're going to read 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 3 through 16. He says, attend to those widows who are truly widows. Wait a minute. Okay, there's a class of widows, and in the class of widows, there are truly widows. What does that imply? I mean, what does that statement say? If you think about it logically, what does it imply? Maybe there are hypocrite widows. You think? Well, let's continue reading. Verse 4. Yet if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them learn to be first devoted to their own family and to give back to their progenitors, that is, their parents. For this is good and acceptable in the eyes of God. But the one who is truly a widow, and now notice the words in brackets here, having become destitute. That's how he defines what truly a widow is. Having become destitute, has become dependent on God, and continues in petitions and prayers night and day. Is this widow a hypocrite widow, like we read in Isaiah? Okay. Is she a follower of Christ?
Yes.
He says she's truly a widow. She has become destitute. She has become dependent on God, and she continues in petitions and prayers night and day. Now look at verse 6. He says, but the extravagant one, that is an extravagant widow, while alive has died. Then he says, charge these things also so that they may be blameless, that is widows. And if anyone is not providing for his own, especially those of his family, he has disowned the faith and is worse than a disbeliever or an unbeliever. Now, question, where does the primary responsibility lie for taking care of widows? According to this passage, who is responsible to take care of widows?
Children.
Who?
Children.
The children and the grandchildren. It says grandchildren also. Look at verse 4. If any widow has children or grandchildren, let them learn first to be first devoted to their own family and to give back to their progenitors. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Pronunciation? Thank you. That is their parents. The first responsibility for taking care of widows is her children and her grandchildren. All right? That's what the Bible says. Now, what if her children and her grandchildren are unbelievers and they could care less about mom? And they leave her. Let's say we have a lady in our church who's a widow. And she's got, I don't know, 3 or 4 children. But they could care less about her. They'd leave her destitute. How would this passage apply? Should we take up the slack? When he says that the children should learn to be first devoted to their own family, take care of mom, who's he talking to? Is he talking to unbelievers? He's talking to people in the church, right? People who are Christians, people who are followers of Christ. He's talking to them. Don't make the church take up the slack for you because you're not providing for mom or dad. I mean, this would apply to a widower as well. If he's unable to work. Yes.
So in other words, get this passage and send the children and grandchildren an email and say, take care of your mom.
Look, we have no control over what unbelievers and ungodly people do. Isn't that right? We have no control over that. And there's a lot of men out there who let their moms starve because they don't care. They let their own kids starve, never mind their moms. Right? I mean, there's a lot of men out there like that. Or women. Even daughters. His point, I have a cold, sorry. It's not puberty, I promise you. Anyway, his point is, he's commanding the people of the church. All right, the commands that the Apostle Paul gives are for Christians or for people in the church. If there are people in the church and they have a mom, take care of your mom. If she is unable to take care of herself, if she's a widow, you take care of her. It's your responsibility to take care of her. Now, look at the next verse, verse 9. It literally says, enroll widows who are no less than 60 years old. Now, what does he mean, enroll them? Enroll them in what? Well, what you have to understand is in the early church, they actually had an official category for widows, Christian widows, who were not able to support themselves anymore, and the church took over the job of supporting them as a congregation. In other words, the church itself adopted this lady as mom, or one of our widows. And because she has no means of support, because she's destitute, but yet she's a faithful Christian, and her family won't take care of her, or they're unfaithful, or she has no family, the church would sort of adopt her, and they had an official category of ladies that would fit into this category. And the church was, they provided her housing, they provided her meals, they provided everything, but it wasn't on a high, you know, I mean, it wasn't extravagant. It was just basic necessities. Now let's continue reading and you'll get the gist of this. He says, enroll widows who are no less than 60 years old. And he gives more criteria for any widow who is going to be added to this number. All right. Number one, she can't be younger than 60. Number two, the woman of one man, or a husband of one wife. That is, she, and he uses the perfect tense here. So it literally says, having been the wife of one man, or the woman of one man. That is, she lived her life with one man. Number three, having a record of good deeds. If she nourished children, if she was hospitable, if she washed the feet of the saints. And of course, that doesn't mean literally. It's a metaphor for helping in the church and so forth. If she relieved the afflicted, and if she followed every good deed. Now, is that widow one of those hypocrites that Isaiah talked about? No. Is she a faithful daughter of God? Yes. She's to be included, if she has no other means of support, she's to be included among the number that the church adopts and takes on as their responsibility to make sure she has housing and food and clothing and so forth. Look what he says in the next verse. But refuse younger widows. That is, don't take them in as to support them. He says, for whenever they may become impatient. And this word impatient implies being come dissatisfied. You know, sometimes people will agree to something, you know, but then after a while they say, yeah, this isn't really working out for me. You know what I mean? I'm not really happy with this arrangement. And that's what he's talking about. Refuse younger widows, for whenever they may become impatient against Christ, they want to remarry, having judgment because they repudiate their previous trust. What's he talking about here? Well, here's the way it worked. Whenever there was a widow who was in this kind of a situation, and she had been faithful to Christ, but now she has no means of support, she made a vow to remain a widow, not to remarry, and to devote her life to ministering to the saints, to ministering to the needs of the church, the rest of her life. She made a vow to do that. And by the way, this is where the Roman Catholics get the idea of a convent, you know, the nuns and all that kind of stuff. Now, they don't follow the criteria that the Apostle Paul laid out here. They take young women, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But the idea of taking a vow of celibacy, not to marry, and to just devote your whole life, the rest of your life, to serving God. That concept actually comes out of this passage. All right? And so some women did that in the early church, and the church supported them. But he says not to allow younger widows in this group. And he says the reason why. What's the reason why? What did he say?
They might change their mind.
Yeah. They're still younger. Let's say a widow of, I don't know, 35. She's still young, still attractive. Not that somebody 60 can't be attractive, they can. But she's still young, she's still attractive. She says, I want to make a vow to serve Christ. I'm going to remain single now that I'm a widow, and the church is going to support me. And then she does that for a little while, And then she starts getting dissatisfied with that lifestyle. It's not the kind of a lifestyle for a young woman. Okay? It's just not. And so the Apostle Paul says, what's going to happen in that situation? You know, he writes, when I read this and I look at it in the Greek text, it seems to me, and this is, maybe it's just me, but it seems to me that the Apostle Paul is writing this from experience. That is, he's seen what happens. He's not going to say, well, this is what's going to happen. That's what he said. He says they're going to want to, for whenever they become, verse 11, but refuse younger widows, for whenever they may become impatient against Christ, they want to remarry. Is he just making an assumption? Or has he seen this as a pattern? I think he's seen it as a pattern. Okay? He's seen it as a pattern. And so he gives some guidelines for the church not to get themselves all involved in getting all these younger women, you know, enrolled in this, for lack of a better term, I guess, convent, where they're going to devote the rest of their lives to serving Christ in the church. And what's going to happen? They're going to, well, he gets kind of blunt here, okay, ladies. Look what he says. Here's what happens. And he's talking from experience, no doubt. He says, having judgment because they repudiate their previous trust or their vow. At the same time, they learn laziness, wandering about houses. They are not only lazy, but gossips and meddlers, saying things they ought not. He says they are these things, which tells me this is what was happening already in the church, in some of the churches. And so that's why the Apostle Paul tried to rein it in and put limits on it because of that. Okay, I'm not trying to make the ladies uncomfortable because, you know, you ladies are not gossips or lazy or any of those things, right? You're hardworking. Okay. Shut your mouth, Tim. Okay. Verse 14. Consequently, I want the younger widows to remarry. That is those under 60 years old. To train up children, to manage their home, for none of them to give to the adversary an opportunity for slander. For some have already been turned back by Satan. Now, he's clearly saying this has already become a problem. When he says some have already been turned back by Satan, he's saying Satan has already gotten some of these young women doing his bidding out there because of this particular situation. And so that's why he gives the guidelines. All right. Then he closes this section in verse 16. If any faithful man or woman, and of course the word faithful there is talking about a follower of Christ. Anybody in the church who has a mother or a grandmother who is a widow is what he's saying. If any faithful man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. And do not burden the congregation so that they may relieve those who are truly widows. In other words, the point is, look, we have limited resources, people. We have limited resources, right? We want to use those resources in the best way possible. We don't want the adversary to get a foothold in our church. So we have to distinguish between certain widows and other widows. And we have to use the resources in the best way that would be most honoring to God. Now, you know, that some you think there were some widows in that day that when they were, you know, the Apostle Paul's letter is read in the congregation and they're 59 years old and they're going, wait, this isn't fair. You know, Wilma over there is 61 and she can be in this system, but I'm 59 and I can't. You think some of them might have felt that was a little unfair? Maybe. But you have to, you know, when we're talking about these issues where we have on the one hand God telling us we need to help the widows and the fatherless, and on the other hand, he talks about, you know, he has no mercy on those who are hypocrites and all this other kind of stuff. There has to be some kind of a guideline for the church to actually put these principles into practice, right? And so the Apostle Paul, he's writing by inspiration of God. He puts down these guidelines. And there they are. They're in black and white. Should we follow the guidelines? What do you think? If we're going to follow the scriptures, I mean, that's part of it. I think we should. If this situation arises among us, I don't think we have that situation now. But if we had that situation, our church would be obligated by the word of God to take care of that widow, to make sure she had enough to eat and a place to live. We're not going to, you know, she's not going to live large on the church budget, but she's not going to be destitute either. And what is she going to do in return? What is she going to do in return? She's going to minister to the needs of the saints. She's going to be a prayer warrior, right? She's going to have her hand in helping with everything she can possibly do. God honors that. He honors a widow who does that, and he honors a church who will honor a widow like that in that regard. But the bottom line in this passage, if you read it in its context, is, look, the first responsibility is to the children and the grandchildren. If there is any way that the children and the grandchildren can take care of their parents, they have the responsibility. If that's it's simply not the case, that is, her children not alive or whatever it is, the case may be, if she meets these other qualifications, then the church should adopt her sort of like mom. It will all treat her like mom as a congregation and take care of her until the day of her death. That's what the scriptures teach. The principles really are the same as what we saw in the law of Moses. Isn't that right? The law of Moses allowed widows a means of support, but not to just be lazy, not to just sit around and not do anything and have everybody, you know, wait on them. They still had to go out and do it, but they did it with a sense of dignity. And the New Testament does exactly the same thing. And it puts the responsibilities in all the right places. That's what we have here. All right. Any questions, comments? Walter.
Back in verse 10, when you said that if she has washed the saints' feet, you said that was a metaphor. I think that's literal. That was one of the customs they did back then. In fact, it reminds me of the thing here, which really shows the heart of a person. Back in Luke 7, when Jesus had entered the home of Simon, a woman came in there and she started to, I'll just go to verse 44. He said, then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed her my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And you gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time came in. Talk about the anointing and the oil and everything. I think it was a little thing. It was a custom, I think, they did back then.
Okay. All right, well, if that's the case, then we should take it literally. So if we're going to have, we're going to use Margaret as an example. Is that okay if I use you as an example, Margaret? Okay.
You have to grow her hair.
Margaret, how many of you, Margaret, has washed your feet? Okay, Margaret, you're out. Sorry.
You know what I'm saying here.
Walter, let me explain what I mean. Washing feet was done literally. But it was done by the lowest servant on the totem pole.
And there was a lot of stain and a lot of dirt. They needed their
feet washed.
Yes. My point is that they should
do it today. I know what your point is. I know what your point is. You're trying to apply a custom there to today. But I think it's metaphorical, and I'll tell you why. When you talk about washing feet, that was something that the, you know, if a household had servants, the servant on the lowest, you know, rung of the totem pole there, that was his job, to wash people's feet when they came in the door. So what that implies is somebody who had a sense of humility, somebody who would do the lowest task. Not that she had to have the assignment of washing everybody's feet, but that she was willing to stoop to the lowest position and humble herself because, you know, if somebody, you know, let me ask you guys, what's the lowest possible task of taking care of this church? What do you think? Cleaning the toilets. I knew somebody was going to say that. Cleaning the toilets. You know? And what do you think of somebody who volunteers to clean the toilets? They're special. Yeah, we like them. Because nobody else wants to do it. See, that's what this is talking about. It's that kind of a humble attitude that, you know, I'm willing to do even the most menial thing that nobody else wants to do because I want to serve. It's a servant's heart, all right? And in my opinion, it's not saying she has to have done a particular task, but she has to have this quality of being willing to do whatever is needed, whether it's the lowest thing or something else. She's just willing because she loves to serve. All right, that's how I would interpret it. I'm not saying you're absolutely wrong, but I think it's more metaphorical than
I agree with you, and that's what my point was going to go with that. Yeah. That doesn't mean today in today's church, because it's not a customer, we don't walk around.
Well, I know, but even back in that day, that was a job that was assigned to a certain servant. So if she wasn't that particular servant, then she wouldn't be washing people's feet necessarily.
My point was going to go with where you went, but it shows the humility.
Yeah. But see, again, we're talking metaphor now. We're taking washing feet as a metaphor for somebody who is humble, who is not necessarily washed feet, but might have washed toilets, might have washed, you know, or done other things that were. Anyway, that's my point. All right, not to limit it just to that, but just having that humble spirit. Just really, there's nothing more beautiful than a woman who has a very humble spirit and is willing to do things like that. You know. That other people don't want to do. I mean, it's really an amazing thing. There's a lot of people who go, oh, that's beneath me. That's arrogance and pride. And, you know, does God like pride or is he like humility? God resists the proud, he gives grace to the humble. Isn't that right?
This probably goes right in line with what we talked about already. Beautiful are the feet that goes. Apparently, Mary came across
yeah.
this woman. And
yeah.
She